Freedom is the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? Then wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
I want to get the language right.
The big government is in trouble.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of media?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
Hold fast to love and justice. My name is S.M. Gibson, and this is Anti-Media Radio. It is April the 22nd, 2016. There is a lot going on in the world right now outside of Prince, believe it or not, and I am as upset, I guess, as anybody about Prince. Probably not. There's probably people really upset about that a lot more than me, actually. But, you know, still sad he died, I guess, even though I didn't know him. But anyways, I digress. Anyways, I want to go ahead and bring on a wonderful co-host tonight, Kevin Knight. Kevin, what's going on?
Hey, man. Just glad to be here. Friday night. Good hanging out with you. First time I've been here on a Friday night with you. Looking forward to Miss Claire going to be joining us, right?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes, I
Sounds
believe.
Sounds like a party.
Yeah, I think we're trying to get her through now. I think we're see if we can get her on here. So I haven't kept up with any of the political tirades lately, and I kind of feel refreshed about it.
Feel better?
I do, a little bit, that I haven't. I've escaped the nonsense and the madness of SNL gone real life, the reality version.
It's probably a good thing, man. I think we all should probably take a break. I know the few times I've taken a break by force or by choice, if I do too, feel like a new man, like I've got a little bit of that stress. You know, after a while, you just get to where you either get so overwhelmed with it, you either just don't care, or you just you let it eat you and you look pissed off about it and let it basically let it ruin your outlook on life. I've seen it happen plenty of times. Almost fell victim to that myself when I first became, I guess, aware, so to speak. But yeah, man, glad you feel better.
Yeah. But, you know, that's part of it, isn't it?
It is.
Well, once we get closer to Cleveland, it'll get more exciting too.
Oh,
but
sure.
Anyways. There is actually a lot going on in the news right now with Saudi Arabia. Of course, Obama was just over there this week, kind of got the cold shoulder a little bit, had a meeting, you know, the whole 9/11 thing going on, which I was having a conversation today about, Kevin. Can you, like, really believe we're having a public conversation about 9/11?
Well, no. I mean, shoot, years ago, you opening your mouth about such a subject, you immediately be subjected to scorn and ridicule and told him to be in a mental hospital somewhere.
Yeah, I was flipping through the channels really late the other night, and I rarely turn on the TV unless it's really, really late, unless I'm watching something on the news, and turned it on and it was on the news from early in the day or something. And anyway, Sean Hannity was on, and he was like, we've got to release the 28 pages now. Like, he was just on this huge tirade.
Hannity was.
Wow. Yeah, Hannity. And acting like he came up, like, of course, he invented the idea.
Well, he stumbled upon it, right?
Right. And it's just insane that
he, among all people, would be.
Right. But so, anyway, he's even on board with this. And, you know, what? Just a few years ago, if you even suggested anything like that, you're a nut job. Nut job.
Oh, right.
And now we're having like a public debate. See, and because here's what's going to go. I've already seen the United States government trying to pin every single bit of it on the Saudis, is what it looks like. And they're going to be completely, they're going to get away with any being involved. But here's where I think that may not be true, because I think there's, it's possible once we have the narrative of the Saudis, somebody somewhere has to ask, why were the Bushes palling around with royalty, Saudi royalty, in Crawford, Texas, walking across a ranch, holding hands, kissing each other, palling around in Washington, D.C.
And then flown mysteriously out of the country right after the attacks. But, yeah, you know, that's the, you know, we brought this up last show yesterday. A lot of us are optimistic that Obama's going to, you know, I say Obama because he said he, you know, his administration was going to rule on whether or not the 28 pages would be released or not. And we were thinking that, we're optimistic, hopefully, that that would happen. But I think in the back of our minds, all of us are kind of thinking, well, yeah, probably not. And the question was raised, you know, what incentive does the federal government have? What do they have to benefit from this?
I don't know.
No, nothing whatsoever.
I don't know. My mind's been in overdrive, and I don't have an answer. I want to go ahead and bring on a wonderful journalist, Ms. Claire Burnish, with antimedia.org, and you also write with Free Thought Project and what, a whole bunch of other people, Claire?
Yeah, something like that.
You got a new project, too, don't you, Claire?
Yes, I do. Underground Reporter.
Awesome, awesome.
I was there at the first creation thought of that, and I forget it, God, it exists. That's terrible of me.
It is.
It really is. Oh. So, Claire, we're sitting here and talking about kind of Saudi Arabia and the whole 28 pages. Like, can you really believe that we're having a public discussion about this?
It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, this seemed like the stuff of quote-unquote conspiracy theories here in the public spotlight, which, you know, a lot of the families who lost people on 9/11 have kind of been calling for those pages for a very long time. But
people like Sean Hannity are like, I think it's wrong. They can't sue. It's like, whoa, like 2 years ago, you were like, you should be like kicked out of the country. If you even suggest that. I mean, what a world. What is going on?
See, C-SPAN actually had Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers 9/11 Truth actually gave them a whole hour.
Yeah, C-SPAN will do that, though.
They wouldn't do it for Mark Dice.
Well, again.
I know. I'm kidding. I know we brought that up.
Did he really try to do that?
Oh, I'm sure he probably would.
Oh, so that's not a real thing?
No, I'm sure he's called. Actually, I know. I think he's called in a couple times to C-SPAN various times. You know, he plays some of his old, speaking of Hannity, he's called in, spoke to Hannity a couple times in the past. But good old dude.
He's funny, I'll say that. But
he's got his shtick, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I'll say that.
But anyway, back on the, you know, not checklist on a pier somewhere in San Diego.
Right.
So yeah, Claire, I'm just in amazement that we're having this conversation. And you know, I was saying just a second ago, is this going to lead to the conversation of who covered this up? Like, why were these pages suppressed? Somebody knew this stuff, obviously. And the Bushes are piling around with it. So it's like, you know, the United States government had this information the whole time, knew it was the Saudis the whole time. It's going to show, yeah. I guess, that maybe, is it going to show we flew them out of the country? Is it going to, like, finally reveal all that, that, you know, are they going to admit it?
I see a bunch of different directions here. I mean, obviously, with the way that the Saudis are reacting to the possible disclosure of what's in the pages, there must be something rather explosive. I mean, even
I already know they're going to pin everything on them, and they're going to, like, we don't know what you're talking about. It's all them. That's what I think. They're going to be the Oswald. But I think there's a geopolitical reason for it. There's a reason they're throwing Saudi Arabia under the bus. But why?
Well, I have a theory on that, I think. That this, obviously the Saudis are quite involved in the events of that day. Okay, so that's a given based on their reaction and based on kind of, you know, little bits of evidence here and there that we've all kind of been reading about recently. But I think that the U.S. government involvement, you know, that's a distinct possibility, and perhaps they're hoping that what the Saudis have done is big enough and explosive enough that the U.S. government won't maybe look as bad. And this is, like, with increasing calls because, you know, the Saudis have a terrible human rights abuse record. Perhaps they're thinking that it would be kind of a bait and switch and they can just throw the Saudis under the bus and people will basically ignore the U.S. role. It's just a theory, but
I think, you know. I believe that Saudi Arabia will be ignored because they're Saudi Arabia. That's how the U.S. would play it. All of a sudden, they would be this horrible human rights violator. You know, they would pull that card so fast. We can believe you. Look at this. Look at what you've done. And, you know, ignore that, you know, Obama was there 2 days ago. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I think this is all about to change suddenly the landscape, especially in the Middle East, with who's aligned with who, because they're really flirting with this.
Well, and they're already making plans for an economy that's no longer based on oil. You know, we saw already that they wanted to make some very big business transactions, trying to get away from the, you know, basically depending on their economy being afloat with oil. So, you know,
just forgive me. Just saying words here. This is no set in stone thing. Is it feasible that this was all arranged the entire time for it to be Saudi Arabia, and when we were ready to pull the plug on being dependent on oil, we could do it this way and take them out at the same time and just end it?
Well,
even feasible?
There's a lot of credence to that if you consider the present oil glut and the fact that, you know, we're, like, fracking the hell out of the country. And, yeah. I mean, it's not a bad idea. It's not a bad theory there.
But, you know,
but the U.S. economy is not ready for that whatsoever.
I don't think so either.
But I guess you're saying down the road, who knows?
But they're ready. They're flirting with pulling this trigger now. I don't know if Obama does it, though. I just don't think he will. They're hanging, what, $750 billion over our head?
So they claim.
Right. So, you know.
Yeah, and think about it, too, because if the U.S. actually divulges the the pages and the Saudis do pull out and, like, basically commit this, follow through on this economic blackmail, it's going to pull down the economy all over the world, and the U.S. will be to blame for it, even though it was really the Saudis' fault. If you think about it, that's kind of, that's pretty hefty.
If that were to happen, Saudi Arabia is still going to suffer tremendously. Either way, so I think that would still, it would really harm Saudi Arabia. But, you know, Scott Gibson asked, you know, is it feasible, the plan, purposely to let this go down and look bad, you know, like Saudi Arabia has egg on their face. One thing I think is curious is that we've seen reports that, you know, most of the hijackers were of Saudi origin.
15 of the 19 hijackers were
right,
Saudi Arabia.
Right.
So we invade Iraq.
Right. Oh, exactly. Nobody realizes that, hey, something just...
That's what I don't get. Like, they're coming around now. Like,
we're just
it's
now
2016.
It's a different country.
And they're now just saying, hey, wait a second. Something about this is funny.
Why exactly are we going to...
Yeah, that's literally what's happening.
Yeah.
Just 16 years later, all of a sudden, wait a minute. This is fishy. What's going on over here? I think it was these guys. We went into that country. What were we doing? Whoops. Now we got to invade Saudi Arabia.
Right. Unfortunately, that sounds right. I think of all the people I've listened to speak on this, between Thomas Massey and Bob Graham, I think his explanation, Thomas Massey, was the way he explained now that the fallout from this is that he really thought that this would cause the country and the I guess the powers that be to really sit back and pause as we're about to get into another round, even further into this war in Syria and elsewhere. That hopefully this would have the repercussions would be exactly that we do so with a lot more repercussions and hopefully not even do so at all. So, yeah, I would hope that this we're going to see something positive out of this, but who knows? I think, Claire, I think you suggested last night that if we did see the pages, we'd probably see them so heavily redacted it would be almost worthless.
Well, and actually there was a report today that said as much, that said if he does release the pages, they're going to be very heavily redacted for, you know, national security reasons.
So what are these – so even – they're even, like, if they're released, they're still going to be, like, released redacted. Like, so how bad are the 28 pages actually? Like, does it just pin, like, straight up?
I think it's the implications of what it could be. But it brings up another point. If they release these pages, redacted or not, now the people that have actually viewed these papers, are they allowed to speak?
What's
going
to happen to Bush? What's going to happen to Cheney?
Nothing.
Oh, of course not, no.
But how? How can nothing happen?
Because nothing ever does happen. There is zero accountability in every branch and every level of government.
That's red-handed.
You know, either Cheney or Rumsfeld was asked, why was that not investigated?
If these pages are this damning, somebody kept them concealed. Who? Well, who was in charge? Who were the three most powerful people? George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld. So, you know, what happens? Do they answer for anything? Something has to
probably
happen.
Not. I think you could count on this administration, just as we see every administration.
I don't know. I think we're moving somewhere different. I think we're moving somewhere historic.
I think only if the administration literally expected a riot, literally only if it was a means to pacify any potential building up of violence, I think would we see that? Would they actually turn these guys over? But I've got no belief that it's going to happen. I mean, it would be completely new territory.
Yeah, it does kind of sound like we're in uncharted waters here. I mean, this is rather unprecedented. And there are so many varying degrees of repercussions that could happen, that could occur if they release these pages. And, you know, what is their motive both to release them and to keep them suppressed or to release them heavily redacted? I mean, there are a number of questions.
Oh, I agree completely. And, you know, what's interesting to me is that, as Gibson mentioned a minute ago, that the fact we're talking about this and that you can have this conversation with people and not seem as crazy, I think is fantastic. I think it's only going to continue to grow. But what I think is important that, you know, I've heard the suggestion that, oh, if the fan, I can't believe that you would, you know, mention those things or suggest there's any kind of nefarious conspiracy, and they'll follow it up with, well, we know, or somebody died, or, you know, that's disrespectful to the people that lost family members. What they fail to realize is that a lot of this was actually is being pushed by family members who obviously deserve to know the truth, but they're the ones actually pushing for the release of this stuff. And I think that's great. And I think that needs to be used by more people when having these discussions, is to be able to point to, is rather than a particular YouTube video of some Dr. Judy Wood or somebody, be able to point to the drive that family members who actually lost family, other family members, are the ones really behind a lot of this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is not just like the realm of, you know, quote unquote conspiracy theorists and like, you know, wild ideas. This is something that's being pushed by people who deserve to really know what happened that day. And considering how much information has been suppressed, I mean, obviously there is much more that we don't know. So, I don't know.
Yeah, you're completely right. It reminds me, you know, a lot of people don't realize that even the 9/11, original 9/11 Commission report, which a lot of some other folks are thinking that's where the 28 pages were redacted from. That's actually a different report completely. But, you know, even the first round of the 9/11 Commission report, that took so much work to even get an inquiry even put together. You know, President Bush, he refused basically to do it whatsoever. He was finally pressured to do it. And then I forget how many people actually quit the commission for various reasons. But I know it was mentioned a lot of times they were basically kept from being able to do their job that they were actually, you know, there to do.
Yeah, well, that was a big show. It was like the Warren Commission.
It really was. Sideshow.
You know, it's not like, you know, it was there to mislead, if anything. And
yeah,
to be able to write scripts for Hollywood movies. Which, how many movies were made based on the stories in that book?
Oh yeah, plenty.
Mm-hmm. Box cutters.
Plenty. There'll be plenty more.
Box cutters. That's still unbelievable to me that, like, people believe that. That is a thing people believe. That box cutters, four planes simultaneously. I don't believe it.
That's the power of indoctrination for you, though. I mean, if when you're so thoroughly enmeshed in this whole system and you're brought up in the schools and stuff to believe that basically the government can do no wrong and it's there to protect the people, then when you're confronted with something that completely flies in the face of that, it's incredibly difficult for a lot of people.
Oh, it is.
Some of us it's not, but a lot of people it is.
Okay, so we'll just go here. What is your theory with the planes from that day?
Claire?
I don't have one. I still don't know exactly what happened. I think that my concern is not so much how it was pulled off, but who was behind it.
That's true.
Which that's what Rumsfeld said, that either Rumsfeld or Cheney was asked about why was the money that was wired to, I believe it was what, Muhammad Atta, why was that not ever made a more important element of the case, and why was that never looked into? And he said basically that was of little importance. They were just concerned with the people that pulled it off, not the people that backed it. So yeah, I think they've been steering away from that quite a while.
Yeah, it's going to all come out. And that's the thing that's just so unbelievable. This just aha moment people are having and acting like, you know, this is the right American thing to do. We have to do this. It's like, you used to call this completely un-American.
Oh, right. Yeah. Who's never heard that multiple times? Mm-hmm. I mean, even this.
How dare you? How dare you?
Family members.
Families. They're dead. And you're going to question it? And now it's like, we've got to hold them accountable. It's like, what do you think everybody was saying?
Right. Vindicated.
Yeah. Oh, no. Everybody's going to forget that.
You know what? Claire mentioned a minute ago, it's a difficult thing for people to experience. You know, how many times have, I don't know about you guys, but growing up, I thought, you know, obviously I was not alive during the age of having to build the bomb shelters. And I was a real young lass when the whole Cuban Missile Crisis went on. So young, in fact, I was probably not even thought of. But I always expected that if a missile was to come into the U.S. or one of these concerns about an Iranian-made missile flying and bombing us here, you know, I always just assumed that the U.S. would do something, that we'd be safe. I always assumed if a plane flew into the country and wanted to hijack and took out the White House, that they would immediately either be shut down like an Iron Dome type situation, or they'd immediately be taken and and basically shot down or grabbed. Either way, I never expected what happened to have happened. But can you imagine how many people's dreams of how many people's safety and sleep good at night, their ability would be shattered when you ask them the question and bring up how those planes were allowed to fly off course for hours without being obstructed whatsoever. Either whoever allowed that to happen, either the U.S. military is completely inept or it's criminal. It's one of two things. I mean, because how does that happen? I mean, that's and not just, it wasn't one plane, it was multiple planes. I know we all know how it's happened.
Here, okay, this is why I wanted to bring up the planes. And I believe this certain thing happened. It could be this or it could be this. I could see it from a bunch of different angles. The two planes, if there are four, I'll say this. If there are four planes, then two of them are at different locations than we were told about, because there's no visible plane in Pennsylvania and there's no visible plane at the Pentagon. So that leaves two planes. Are the two planes at the trade centers, are they commercial airliners or are they cargo planes? I don't know. You know, you can look at that footage a thousand different ways, and I don't see that it's a commercial plane, but it could be. You know, and then the ultimate question is, well, where did the people on the planes go? You know, I don't know. I don't have a, you know, that's the thing. It's not like I can sit here and tell you, well, this is what happened. I don't know. But I've always had questions. And, you know, maybe we're going to get some answers. I don't know how far, you know, the answers will go. What about you, Claire? I know that you're pretty educated on the subject.
I think that it's the mechanics, although they are interesting, like the mechanics of what actually happens, it's to me the
you believe
fundamentally
it, you believe it's irrelevant.
I'm not sure that they are really that relevant until we know who is behind it. Once we know more about the kind of the foundation of what happened, then I think the details and the mechanics of how it was done will become incredibly more pertinent. But right now I think that the basics are really kind of foundational to our understanding.
I think that's smart. I completely agree with that. I think, well, you know, the real criminals are the people that, you know, masterminded it. I mean, I suppose that, okay, what was the U.S.'s story trying to be here? Is there's these 19 guys and one or two other people, and then Osama bin Laden. and some, you know, masked ninjas in the desert, drove these planes through those buildings. Like, who supposedly did this? Al-Qaeda? It was Al-Qaeda. Like, you know, Osama bin Laden was never charged for it.
It was the Khorasan group. The Khorasan group actually did it.
He was charged for other stuff. He was never charged for that.
Who was?
Osama bin Laden was never charged for 9/11.
Oh, no, he wasn't. No, and he left off the some big, huge fugitive list for a while for that same exact reason, which that raised a bunch of questions as to why he was left off.
Yeah, well.
Well, he actually didn't take responsibility for it for...
right until two days before the election.
Right, and that was probably for a little bit of...
In 2004, right before the election.
You know, what's crazy is that, to my understanding, I think we've all heard that the idea that the military was playing military games, so to speak, that they're running a drill the morning of. I forget what the... Claire, you may remember. I forget what the name of the drill was. But supposedly, the military, they were running actually a drill. And so what they were seeing on their radars,
they believed it was
something Guardian. But to my understanding, the premise was that there was a hijacking and that Osama bin Laden was the supposed mastermind of that.
But I think a lot of these documentaries and stuff have gone into a lot of that, and I think everybody has heard that narrative. I assume most people have heard and believe that by now. I've thought that for a while, that most people secretly kind of believe it. That's why Trump was able to get away with what he's able to get away with.
I've never met anybody who has seen loose change and didn't come around to at least being like, okay, before I would never even question the official story. I may not know all the details now, but I definitely know that something is not right. Which is interesting because... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Claire.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
Just that loose change. It's interesting because loose change, the maker of that. I know I was pretty impressed by that, but at least the way they put it together and all the information was pretty great, and it seemed very plausible. And a lot of people, I've seen that quoted as the movie to watch, the documentary to watch to get up to date on that. It's interesting that the maker came out here. It's been, I guess, a couple of years now. For whatever reason, came out and basically said, turned away from that, disowned it, said he regretted making it.
He did.
He said he claimed that he was just a young, stupid kid putting a bunch of stupid stuff together and that he didn't buy any of it. Can you believe that?
Uh-huh.
Doesn't it make you wonder?
I bet.
Who got to him or what incentive he had
for that? I'm sure he believed that.
Oh, I'm sure, right.
I bet you he just put all that time and effort and research and compiled all that. It was just like, how foolish I was.
It was just a goofy
story.
But Claire, I think you're going to make a point.
I was going to recommend James Corbett's little brief 9/11 thing in a nutshell for people who might have doubts, because he puts it so... He kind of does it with a little bit of a humorous overtone, but he sums it up very briefly and kind of makes very valid points by doing so.
It's called 9/11, A Conspiracy Theory.
Yeah.
He's got a real similar one to the OKC, to the Oklahoma City bombing. Hitman, that guy really does a great job at doing his informational pieces, doesn't he?
Now, that's one I don't think will ever... I don't think there'll ever be any justice on that one, Oklahoma City.
No.
I think that's gone to history.
I think you're right.
Shocked that 9/11. Like, I'm shocked. I'm amazed that it's, you know, and how much we'll get, we don't know. But we shall see. Well, I'm going to tell you what, I've got going to move on to the next topic of the day. I've got a story on the antimedia.org right now. Over 1,000 world leaders just slammed the UN's failed effort to end the drug war. And we've got Prince in the news saying Percocet, legal drugs.
You know, he just died.
No way.
Word.
I did not know that.
Word.
So, look, it's time to end the drug war. We just got done talking about how this whole 9/11 thing is coming around. Now we're talking about the UN. They're talking about ending. Okay. Claire, where are you making of this?
Well,
are we experiencing an uprising of some sort?
The UN, I am not really sure what happened here. It's rather inexplicable, and a lot of countries are rather, you know, outraged about. There had been a lot of proposed changes to, even to the extent of actually ending the drug war altogether, and basically nothing happened. I mean, there were really no changes made. So I have not yet figured out why they decided to kind of go back on everything that they had proposed. Obviously, we have a number of studies from countries, Portugal, the Czech Republic, Ireland, all of these places who have legalized or decriminalized drugs on massive scales have experienced nothing but benefits. So to not follow through on plans to make sweeping changes is rather inexplicable.
Yeah, and I mean, and look at how, you know, something, this ties into another story, actually, we've got up on the page right now is new report proves U.S. law enforcement preparing for rioting on a national scale, but the drug war has allowed these law enforcement agencies to become militarized, and it's given police stations across the country an excuse to become militarized.
Directly. That's directly how it happened.
Yeah. So, and, you know, we're seeing now, but now they're just doing it. I don't think they're using the drug war as an excuse anymore at all. I think they're just doing it.
Well, they hardly have to.
Yeah.
I mean, now people are understanding you don't have to even, you know, it's sad to say, but law enforcement doesn't even have to probably give an excuse that the people will be, you know, the ones to step up and say, oh, we need it. It's to keep our town safe or to terrorists or ISIS or whatever. It's just, man, it's infuriating how brainwashed literally and how receptive people are growing to these pieces of machinery.
That really struck me as kind of insane when I was writing this particular article that there are no longer any fetters or pretenses of saying that they're militarizing the police to protect anybody. It's literally to quash riots, demonstrations, and even peaceful protests. And not only that, but they are spending a lot of money, like law enforcement agencies across the country are spending a lot of money buying up riot gear and stuff, and I noticed that included in that are not only non-lethal weapons, but lethal weapons as well now. So this is really becoming rather serious.
Yeah, it really is. Have you thought any more about your Canadian threat?
Well, they're still talking about, you know, legalizing cannabis, so it looks like they're kind of going in the opposite direction, to at least to a minor extent.
Yeah,
it's just too cold up there, though. I don't know.
So you're not gonna do it, huh? You've changed your mind?
Not necessarily. I'm kind of on the fence still. I mean, I'm still stuck in Ohio right now. But I mean, looking at the more that I research these articles, like one after another, like the worse it seems to be getting. And it's, I don't know if it's. I don't want to be alarmist or reactionary or anything, but it. You have to wonder, like, where this is eventually headed.
I will say this. It's hard not, when you see story after story after story, it is hard not to be pessimistic because you just see this negative stuff over and over and over. But this is what I want to say. You know what you're not seeing? And unfortunately, and look, I will take the blame for this as much as anybody. I'm not going to sit here and run and hide for it. The positive stories in the world, they don't get reported. You don't hear about it. When somebody helps somebody out, that does, you know, you don't hear any of that stuff, the uplifting stuff.
There's a reason for that, though. You know, the reason for that is that a lot of the stories that are more negative, they actually concern people's safety. They concern their well-being.
I know. I'm aware.
I mean, I agree with you, but...
I'm aware. I completely agree with you. But, you know, the other stuff just doesn't get reported. Well, a lot of it, it's like, a lot of it you don't hear about. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. And sadly, people don't care. It's, I hate to say it, but they just don't.
I think that attitude's waning, though. I think a lot more people care than what they did several years ago.
I think they're starting to.
Definitely, definitely. Up in Concord, Massachusetts, man, New Hampshire, excuse me, there's a great video of, you can find it on YouTube, of a Marine Corps colonel who actually spoke out at a town hall at a local city council meeting about the militarization of police forces up there in their area. And what he went on to is explain his belief, and it's, you know, he said it with a lot of authority, is that the U.S. government is in fact preparing for a nationwide situation, but what they're doing is strategically placing military assets around the country so that in the event something is needed, there'll be an easy access. So to some degree, be it the states and be it that that's maybe just even an excuse, the federal government, I think, is preparing and probably always has been. So, yeah, we're going to see it. The states and the cities doing the same thing. And even if there was not terrorism, there had to be another excuse for it. There really would. I think we would have to see that that military excess gear is going to go somewhere besides the hands of ISIS and other jihadists. So I'm not surprised that we're going to see this. We kind of always knew this was going to happen in the future. I mean, didn't we always envision this was the way it would probably end up going?
Yeah.
It's the last gasp of a dying empire is what it is. Oh. And it's its last attempt to hold on to power at any cost, and it will probably, that makes it even more dangerous, in my opinion. So,
yeah, you're right. Absolutely,
yeah,
right.
It's, I mean, it's certainly what it seems. Where do we go from here? I guess, you know,
Canada.
That's what I'm saying, and you're all like, I don't know.
I know, but like, then we talk about it, and it's like, well, maybe that really wasn't a bad idea.
Look, we have to be positive about it. I know I'm the last person that's ever positive about anything. I get that. That's okay. But
I agree with you.
But you got to try to stay positive.
I mean, look, we've always been going down this track, right? I mean, it's always, in my opinion, we've kind of had a duty to resist, and it's always been the state's always been marching along at this path. It's just doing it faster and harder. But I think for the first time, you've got a lot of people that are really pissed off about it.
There's hope. There is hope.
Well, there was no hope whatsoever until people get pissed off and fired up. And, you know, I think we should be reminded that it doesn't take...
It's ironic. I really do believe Barack Obama actually gave hope to this country accidentally. Because when he failed and did none of the stuff that he promised and didn't give the country hope and bombed 8 countries and turned out just like Bush before him for the most part, another liar, people are like,
you hope it
screw
clicked,
it.
Maybe?
Yeah. People are like, screw it. I think people started waking up.
Both parties needed a good representative.
I think it woke a lot of people up. Because look at, and then I think Ron Paul helped in that too. Because look at his support from 2008 to 2012 and how it grew.
Oh, certainly.
So.
And this is like the expansion and contraction of government and the state, like throughout history, for as long as there has been a state in history. This is what happens. It seems to go in cycles where, you know, the state at first is, you know, at least arguably somewhat beneficial to the people who are under its rule, and everything seems to go along just fine. And then, of course, the state becomes a power-hungry animal, and you have imperialism and empire, and that grows and grows and grows, and out of that seems to come fascism, authoritarianism, and, you know, any number of other things. And then that becomes obvious to everybody, and they realize that nobody's benefiting, and there is a rebellion against it. And the state sees that there's a rebellion brewing and tries to contract even further against the people, and then everything falls apart. And I think that we're like at that last kind of stage right now.
It certainly
seems so, wouldn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And, you know, I think the election, I think a lot will, the election will tell us a lot, especially if we get, you know, Trump versus Hillary. Because I think you'll get, I honestly think you'll get different presidencies from the two of them. I don't think you'll get a different president from anybody else, but Trump, I think you would. I don't know what that'll be, and I don't think that means better at all. Do I think that means better? But I think it'll be means different. You know, what does that entail? I don't know. I don't trust him, though. I don't trust him having his finger anywhere near any button. Or do you think, Claire, do you think it'll just be the exact same with the Trump presidency, Claire? You think it'll just be the exact same, you know, follow the standard rules?
Honestly, at first, it's possible that it might be perhaps a bit of a relief, but I sort of doubt that. And I think ultimately, yes, it's not only going to be the same, it could be worse. But it would be worse under Hillary as well. So Sanders, I'm not really sure about. I don't think that wouldn't be good by any means, but
I think poor Bernie would collapse the economy super quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, certainly. He probably wouldn't mind that happening a bit.
But at this point, is collapsing the economy really all that bad, considering some of the alternatives we're looking at with like this enormous military buildup in the country and, I mean, of the police?
Let me tell you something. Hey, that breadlines business ain't no joke because we ain't far off.
I mean, but we might have both under some of these other people. We might have both this enormous police state plus the breadline. I mean, I'm not sure.
And let's think about it. We would have breadlines except for now people are getting checks sent directly to the door rather than people having to actually go out and stand on the street and ask for assistance, you know. That's the welfare comes right to the door, but you know, unemployment numbers are just as high, if not actually higher, than they were during the Great Depression.
They're much higher. It's misrepresented.
Oh,
like there's study after study that they're misrepresenting it by like at least twice as much.
Oh right. Well, when the CBO decides to redecide how that's the Congressional Budget Office in the White House decide they're going to change how they determine who exactly is employed and basically decide, hey, we're going to throw out all previous definitions and we're going to rewrite this thing our way. That's what you get.
I believe them. Just trust them. They love you. The government's good for you, man.
You know what I just started reading again?
What is that?
1984.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure you've seen the movie also on YouTube, or I say YouTube. That's where I watched it last. It's on.
Dude, have you seen the reality show on CNN right now? There's a 1984 reality show right now.
Is there
on the second?
Huh.
Yes.
You're kidding.
Yeah. Turn on Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, any of them. 1984. You're gonna see it right in front of you.
That's why I started reading it again.
Only imagine what the premise is like.
Well,
are they on an island at all? Are they secluded? Is it any kind of?
Yeah, it's a big island. It's huge, but yeah.
Maybe you have to just give it a quick glance, and that's about it.
You should. You should, Kevin.
Yeah. I'm missing something.
Yeah.
It's okay. I still love you.
Is this a critique about society? I guess you guys were.
Never
hey, Prince died.
Did he really?
He did.
So, yeah, it's going to be Percocet.
Think so?
I think so. Legal drugs. Legal.
I saw it mentioned that they gave Prince an autopsy, but not Scalia. Not that those cases have anything to do with each other at all.
First off, Scalia didn't write Purple Rain, so I don't care. Okay?
Right.
How about that?
You're right. And he's not mad great at basketball.
Apollonia. That's all I'm going to say.
Apollonia. Can I put my Apollonia?
Oh, did you know that story's true? Prince said that the Dave Chappelle story, the Dave Chappelle skit of Prince, that I read this yesterday, I believe, that story was true.
Really?
Yeah. And he said, he's like, but, he said, the reason I won is not because I'm any good at basketball. He says it's because Charlie Murphy's that bad at basketball.
Did you say it like that?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that was probably some of the best skits that Dave Chappelle did, I think, was the Prince.
Yeah.
Charlie Murphy.
Game blouses. So, oh, yeah, he lives, Dave Chappelle lives close to your way, doesn't he, Claire?
I don't know.
He lives somewhere in Ohio, that's all I know. But,
I saw him, he's actually got muscles. Have you seen him? At some point, when I was Googling for a picture of him as Prince, I came across a picture, a couple of pictures.
Oh, yeah,
and Dave Chappelle's got, like, ripped up.
You know, man, that guy's, like, really aware of what's going on.
Oh,
seems
yeah,
like.
Very.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Really aware.
Oh, he's in touch, definitely.
Yeah. It seems like he just kind of dipped off and went to live his life. I don't know what happened there. That was an odd situation. Just turned down $50
million.
Oh,
he said, you know, actually, I watched the interview. He said he had gotten, he finally got to the point where I think his father was mentor had always told him that when it quit being fun, that was time to hang it up. And he said that was it. He was felt the urge and the pressure to outdo the previous seasons, which, you know, I'm sure if you remember at the time, that was like everybody
that doesn't account
knew
for him. That doesn't account for him running away, though, and just freaking out and being like, I'm done with you people.
Running away, I think, well, he didn't.
None of the drug story or he freaked out and went crazy. I don't believe any of that, but he had enough, and he was like, I'm done with this nonsense.
Oh, yeah, that's basically what he said.
Yeah. But what got him to that point?
I'm telling you. He that much money. When the Dave Chappelle season was on, when that show was on, I knew so many people that didn't go home to watch TV, but were now watching that Dave Chappelle show. So many people I knew that cared less about watching a television program. Everybody I knew was watching the Dave Chappelle show. He was literally the funniest man, I think, that at the time, if not to me, I still consider him one of the greats now. But he himself said that the pressure was just so much that everybody expected for him to be the funny guy. When they see him on the streets, you know, he got so popular during that short time that he couldn't go anywhere or do anything, and everybody expected him to be funny. So it was the pressure, the pressure from all of that combined is what made him ultimately take off and leave.
That's what he said.
Oh, yeah. That's what he said.
Chasing expectations. Like, everybody has – if everybody puts so many tight expectations on you, they always expect you to outdo yourself over and over and over again, and you're in the public spotlight like that, that is an enormous amount of pressure.
That's exactly what he said too. He had to do each time he had to outdo himself. He was expected to, otherwise it sucked. You know, that's how people viewed his material. If it wasn't better than the previous, well, mm-hmm. He's not living up to it. He's not being Dave Chappelle. So
right.
Yeah. Maybe.
He's very, very awake, though. He said he was awake. He's an educated guy, for sure.
Very,
no doubt.
Very much so.
But, F your couch, man.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get to hang out with him when we go to the convention, which probably ain't going to happen.
Oh, it needs to. If it doesn't,
it's going to happen.
I'm trying, Claire. Scott was on, Gibson was on board a few days ago. Now he's kind of flaking out.
No. You're both gone.
Yeah, I still haven't decided on if I'm going to the
convention.
Oh,
he was.
You're going.
He was. 2 weeks ago, he was decided he was going.
Yeah, now.
I would really prefer not to go by myself to this crazy thing that's going to happen, considering they have, like, almost 4 miles of fence and stuff going on up there, so.
There's going to be lots of people there that we know. A lot of.
I'm sure there are, but still.
Derek will be there for sure. Radowski will be there for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So, there.
But you can be there, too.
I'm telling you, we're bound to catch some good info, some good tape.
Yep.
Yeah, probably.
Plot it out, man. We can stream.
This is
can,
probably a
live,
conversation
live
best
streaming.
Left for off air. I think we just started talking about planning a trip to the convention.
I just think this convention is going to be, for all intents and purposes, this convention is going to be this will be a pivotal moment for this country. This is going to be something that people will need to know about. I just don't see it happening any other way. There are just so many possible clashes of the different political personalities and protesting groups and everything else. I mean, this is kind of the culmination of very, very bumpy election season, and it should be it should be interesting, to say the least.
I like your pep talk, your sales pitch there.
Sounded good, right?
Yeah.
I already want to go, and I'm already planning on it.
Still on the fence.
Come on.
Still on the fence.
That's all right. We'll dig that fence up and take it with us.
Anyway. Well, I tell you what, Claire, I know that, tell everybody a little bit about what's going on with the Underground Reporter.
Yes. Yeah,
I think that's a cool new page that I don't know if a lot of people know about yet.
Yes, we're still getting underway and getting organized, and it's really going well. And we have some rather phenomenal writers on board, and we're trying to kind of put a more of a positive spin on some news stories and try to, like we were speaking about before tonight, you know, trying to look for those positive stories that aren't necessarily covered widely. So, you know, although we're covering news and, you know, information and things as well, we're also trying to kind of uncover the things that show solutions and that change is possible. So,
more uplifting.
Yes.
All right.
We need more of it,
that's
for sure.
There's a solution right there to my problem from earlier.
Boom. So we can keep feeding out the negativity and reminding everybody that...
Beating out the negativity. Yeah. We'll see.
It's reality. It's not, you know, it's not...
It is.
Yeah, it's not like fluffy clouds and unicorns. I'm not saying all that. I'm saying that there are possible solutions to things. There are ways to make change, and that is the weight of the focus.
So wait, there's not going to be any stories about fluffy clouds? I'm out. I'm out.
Well, I mean, you know, if you really want that, I suppose.
Yep, that's it. I'm looking right now, apparently, from an ad on our page, why there's an ad of 25 dog breeds with the lowest maintenance cost. I do not know, but I'm looking.
Click on it.
No, I'm not. That won't.
So, Claire, we can find this Underground Reporter. I guess you guys have a
Facebook
page.
What I will click on is...
Underground Reporter.
UndergroundReporter.org.
That's it.
And the Facebook page, too, right? Under the same name?
Yes, and the Facebook page has... We are working on that. We're getting a new look for the site and everything, so it's going to be a very, very good thing.
Man, people got to keep me in the loop with this stuff.
as if I didn't already need another website to but I look forward to this because I need some positive reinforcement, put it that way. No, seriously, yep. we love it's easy to gripe about all the issues and all the problems, but nobody seems to be offering solutions, and the ones that are offered are your standard Republican Democrat big government, grow the government, smash some people. And basically ignore the will of the people. That's their answer. So it's great to have see that there are some alternatives to the standard way of dealing with issues.
That's the way I'm liking to look at it. I mean, there are things going on all over the world that are, you know, people are solving things. People are solving problems and issues without the help necessarily of the government and the state. And everyone needs to be able to see that it's possible.
Well, it totally is possible, and, you know, that's what hopefully, you know, the younger generation will really understand that. I think that's really important.
I agree.
That young people get it. Because, I tell you what, there's our outro music. Well, that's it for me. I'm S.M. Gibson, your host of Anti-Media Radio on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We're building for Vaughn tonight, for Kevin, for Claire. We'll be back next week. Anti-Media Radio. Out. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.